I was the guy who was like, I'm going to quit smoking weed, and I know exactly how to do it. I'm going to start taking opioids.
It's a fair trade.
Yeah, it's like a plan. It's like a tiered plan. Because I'm mentally addicted to weed, but I don't want to do weed, but I'm going to be super stressed because I'm not doing any drugs. So let me take pharmaceutical grade opium, basically. And that'll be what gets me off of. Oh wait, I have a right. Funny.
It's a decent way to wean off.
Yeah, yeah. That plan worked. No, it didn't.
No.
Oh God. One time, I took a bunch of oxycontin, whatever it's called.
Cotton. Oxycontin.
I took a bunch of that oxycontin, and I fell asleep, and it was like the best sleep I ever had. Like, I felt like, oh, I'm not getting high, I might as well fall asleep. But then, like, as I slept, it just felt like sleeping in God's palms. Like, God just put his
the little... night I slept in God's hands.
Yeah, like, I just, God put his little paws out, and I slept in it like a newborn kitten. And
beautiful.
I had a dream that I should be an artist, that I have an artistic thing inside me that I'm not doing. So I woke up and I drove immediately to Michael's and I bought a bunch of paper and art supplies. Okay. And then like by 2 hours later, while I'm trying to like make art and I'm not good at it, I'm like, you know what? Maybe this wasn't an epiphany. Maybe I just woke up still high.
Yeah, maybe this was all a drug-induced stupor that took me straight to Michael's and back.
I still have those colored pencils.
Ready to go. Once. Ready to go.
When I drove to Michael's, I was like, this is it. This is what I need in my life. I'm gonna draw all day, every day. This was like a sign from the heavens. No, you were just high.
I really want to see the picture you tried to draw.
I drew a TARDIS from Doctor Who.
Okay. It's a rectangle. Shows my creativity. So that's good.
Yeah, it was blue.
It's a rectangle, so it's a decent start.
Yeah, yeah. I figured I'd like work my way up from there.
Yeah. That's like, you know, I do the same thing with hobbies. I think that's an addictive thing that I do, is that I start new hobbies. And one of the ones that I started at some point and occasionally revisit is crochet.
Sure.
But I can only make rectangular things. I can make you a pot holder. I can make you a scarf. That's it. Don't expect a hat. Don't expect mittens.
Oh, God. To make the fingers, that's magic.
Yeah, I don't understand how somebody could do something like that.
Yeah.
Blows my mind.
Yeah.
People are amazing.
But I've never done any crocheting or anything like that.
Yeah, crocheting's pretty therapeutic. It helped me quit smoking when I did. I mean, clearly I smoke again.
You smoke right now.
I'm smoking actively at the moment. But it helped me quit smoking because it kept my hands busy.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would be, and I kept thinking to myself, you know, like, okay, I'll just finish this row and then I'll have another cigarette. Okay, I'll finish row and then I'll have another cigarette. And then, like, you know, by the time I do that 40 times, I've finished a scarf and I haven't had a cigarette. So,
no.
Not bad.
Yeah. This is Cuckoo Bananas, episode 10. I know. Sad.
So sad.
Not since the final episode of Seinfeld has any finale been as anticipated by the American public.
A great sorrow has befallen New York City tonight.
I know. And, the cultural impact, devastating. But yeah, what a journey. What a journey this has been.
Truly. A really lovely experience. Definitely eye-opening and good for the self-awareness.
Yeah, I feel like I've grown in our conversations.
For sure. And I always love having these kinds of conversations, especially, you know, with somebody who gets it but sees it from a different type of perspective, because you and I think very differently. And while we experience some similar things, we handle things differently. We view them differently. So
both headed in the same direction of self-improvement and peace.
Exactly. Peace same goal. Earth. Peace on earth. Goodwill toward men.
Yeah.
You know?
So probably for me, I edit the podcast. And for me, the hardest part of this project has been that you live in like the noisiest house in the world. If it's not the crickets, it's the fucking lights or the fans or ghosts.
The fan, the dog, the ghosts. It's just, it's a busy household. I have to cut out
the booze.
Yeah, all the horns need to be removed.
I'm like Michael Keaton in White Noise, and I'm like, God damn it.
Have you played them backwards?
Yeah. Ooh. Interesting stuff.
Coming soon, Mike and Kate tell ghost stories.
That will be the sequel that
nobody wants
or wanted.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I thought of you this weekend. I was away amongst nature, and I was thinking about when we were talking about like what rejuvenates and inspires us, and how we were discussing how I really like getting to untouched nature, and you like seeing the incredible things that humans can do. And one of my friends mentioned that, you know, she was seeing the city skyline and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I love seeing things like this. I love seeing what humans are capable of. And that's certainly something that I think has changed about me because of this podcast, because of you, because I think for a long time, I kind of resented humanity. I kind of got mad at humanity and blamed like the human race for ruining everything. Like, you guys fucked it all up, and that's why I'm miserable.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily true. There are so many incredible things that I love and enjoy and that I appreciate every day that are made by incredible humans.
I'm glad I can help you love humans again.
Yeah, that was really big for me, because I think especially over the last few years, like becoming a mother and kind of becoming a little bit of a hermit and spending a lot of my time inside and being more and more isolated from people, I kind of liked the idea of humans in the abstract, but I didn't really like appreciate people. And, you know, I think, like I said, that I kind of blamed humanity for all my problems. Like, everything would be better if this were just a more pure world and humans hadn't muddled it up. And right. You know, that's not really true. And I appreciate you opening my eyes to that.
I mean, we are all stuck under the same conditions. You know, like on TikTok, there's so much rage porn, like Karen videos or videos of dudes freaking out because they're told to wear a mask so they flip out. And the point of rage porn is you're supposed to watch it and get angry, like, look at this douchebag.
Right.
And I'm susceptible to that. But sometimes I'll look at it and I'll be like, that's just an uneducated person who's upset because his job sucks, and he's upset because he's in this Target right now and he forgot his mask, and fucking he lost his job or whatever the fuck. He is living under the same shitty conditions.
Yeah, he's a human. He's experiencing all of these things just like I do. He's able to feel anger. I think for every like one video that we watch like that, we should watch two, you know, videos of like humans doing incredible things.
Right. But a lot that shit doesn't make its way onto TikTok as much.
No, it doesn't, unfortunately. And especially in the time we're in, I feel like people are very preoccupied with anger. And rightfully so. You know, there's certainly reasons to feel anger in today's society. But I think that's a lot of our like social media feeds and all of that is just filled with anger and the kind of people you don't want to see.
Right, right. I feel like anger is a good emotion if it can make you move.
Yeah, it should fuel something.
Right, but
it can't just be anger. It gets
toxic real easy. It doesn't have a long shelf life.
No. No, it sure does not.
you gotta do something with it.
Yeah, you gotta cook with it. You gotta turn it into something else. You gotta make something of it. Otherwise, it's gonna get rancid. It's gonna make shit stink real bad.
Right. It's going to grow overnight. You're going to wake up and it's going to be all over the kitchen. And you're like, what the fuck is this?
It will have taken over everything.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, you know, I'm a very pragmatic, atheist, you know, kind of guy. And you are much more spiritual. You use the term woo-woo.
I do.
Which I appreciate because sometimes spiritual people don't make fun of themselves.
No, you gotta.
Right. And I make fun of myself too. Like, you know, or like someone like Ricky Gervais, like, oh, you don't believe in God? Great. Tell a joke maybe. Like,
yeah.
I know that I'm just as ridiculous a person as whatever. But anyway, I feel like our chats have brought a little bit more woo-woo out of me.
That's great. I love that. I feel like part of my my life's purpose is to make people feel more connected to whatever it is that's bigger than all of us, whatever name it's called by, or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's one of my biggest things. And that's something that I never believed in. Like, I remember after my mother died, people trying to comfort me and say, like, you know, oh, she's always with you and all this shit. And I was like, fuck you. She's gone. You don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing after this. And it took me a really long time and a lot of, you know, personal experiences to come to spirituality. It wasn't just like, oh, now I've decided I believe this and I subscribe to it. It was a lot of very personal things I was like, that were like, you know, now I have no choice but to believe this. Here it is confronting me. Here it is right in my face. And I need to deal with it in one way or another.
Yeah. I feel like more like douchebag kind of atheists will be like, oh, well, what does the word spiritual even mean? You believe in, you know, you don't believe in God, but you believe in ghosts, or you're not a religious person, but you're spiritual. So that means what? Like, you believe in angels or luck or whatever. And I think, you know, I don't believe in any kind of magic. I don't believe in luck. I don't believe it. But I do know that, like, there are stars in the sky, and that's fucking wild. Like, I see that. That's there, and that's fucking bananas. And, like, you know, my point is, like, I think you can be spiritual. I don't like the people on my side, I roll my eyes as I say my side, but I don't like how people on my side are all about, like, no, you're an idiot if you believe in anything at all. And it's like, well, yeah, fucking.
I feel like the biggest difference between an atheist and, like, an asshole atheist is the acknowledgement that there are things and can be things that you don't know.
Right.
Like, there was a time where we didn't know about all the things that we just learn at such a young age. We didn't know. We didn't understand gravity. We didn't, like, there was a time where we didn't know all the things we know now. Do you really think that you're the most evolved being in the universe and you know everything? That's my, like, gripe with people who say things like that. You don't have to believe in something, you know, mystical. You don't have to read some book and then subscribe to every, you know, idea that was fed to you during that experience. Like, you don't have to do that. But to think that you know everything, that everything's been discovered, there is nothing left in the universe to learn. There's nothing that's unseen.
Right, right.
That, I think, is the big difference.
Yeah, but I also think, like, even what we do know, that can still give you a feeling of awe.
Absolutely.
Like, this is a quote that you've probably heard from Charles Darwin. There is grandeur in this view of life, with its several powers having been originally breathed by the Creator into a few forms or into one, and that, whilst this planet has gone cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity, from so simple a beginning, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful, have been and are being evolved.
Yes.
So people argue about this quote because people go, well, what does he mean by Creator? Does he mean that literally, you know, and I think, personally, I think he probably didn't, because he wrote the book on evolution. But I think
there must be some source. Must be some source.
And the point is, there's grandeur in this view of life. Like, even if you don't, let's say you don't believe in, like, any kind of organized religion. If you're, like, looking at, say, this sort of argument between, like, a creation myth versus evolution, and you say, well, creation myths are mumbo jumbo and evolution is reality, which I believe, or I know, like, evolution's still wild. Like, that's still something that should give
still
you
incredible. Awe. Absolutely, because nature, this is my belief. I don't believe in, I don't partake in any sort of organized religion. I don't believe in some humanoid type form in the sky, you know, looking down and pulling the strings on everything. But I believe that there is some larger thing. There is a spirit of the universe, and that's science and nature, and that's the way we interact with each other and the way we treat each other and the way we learn and all these things that are intangible but very real. That's what I believe God is. That's what I believe, that energy that connects all living things, and that energy that sparks new thought and creativity and whatever. Like, that's what I believe God is. And when I, you know, when I read any sort of religious text or anything, I think that the large issue is when people have now personified God instead of acknowledging it as, you know, thinking I have to respect this man in the sky or I'm going to go to hell, rather than to respect my fellow human being and the animals I share the earth with and the earth itself, because that's God.
Right, right. I had a conversation recently with a very devoutly Christian person, and we were talking about someone else that we knew that lost a pet. And this person, who I like and I think is a good person, said to me matter-of-factly, well, it doesn't really matter, right? Because animals don't have souls like we do.
Wow.
And I thought, like, it really sort of stopped me in my tracks. And
that's kind of how I feel right now hearing it.
And they believed it. And to me, it's like, fuck, like.
We are animals.
Right. Well, that's
like, first of all, and animals are so pure and soulful and.
Right.
I believe all living things should be treated with respect.
Yeah, of course. So one thing that was going on throughout the recording of these episodes that we talked about, but never directly, is the COVID-19 pandemic. And I don't know. I don't think it's going to be over anytime soon. Hopefully, as we record this, we are closer to a vaccine. But this whole let's put it this way: in the whole process of conceiving of Cuckoo Bananas, coming up with the idea, recording the episodes, you and me have not shared a space together in that entire time.
No, not once.
We have done this entire thing through Zoom. We communicate through texts, and anyone else that I communicated to through the making of the show, to, you know, create the logo for the show or whatever, was all through text. So I as much as it's not about COVID, I was thinking today, like, I bet in 10 years, if the world is a more healed place, I'll look back at these episodes and think, well, it's all about COVID. That's so in the heart of COVID life.
Right.
That there's no way. I mean, even the word Zoom, I think for the rest of my life, I'll hear the word Zoom and I'll be like, ugh.
Yep. It's synonymous with COVID at this point, I feel like. And never COVID, saw Zoom commercials before now. And, I know. You know.
And, you know, I did not get sick from COVID. No one in my close family got sick from COVID. So I'm very, very lucky in that regard. But even if you haven't gotten sick, if you are a live human being in the world right now, you are feeling some pain.
Yeah. Absolutely. The impact is worldwide.
It felt like for the first couple of weeks, all anyone would talk about was COVID. Mm-hmm. And then there was a turning point where no one wanted to talk about it. And we really didn't talk about it in these episodes, but it's there, right?
Yeah.
It's there.
Absolutely. And, you know, honestly, who knows if this even would have come about without COVID, without the freedom to have that thought, without the time or whatever.
Yeah.
And the necessity, really, because we need connection right now. We need connection. We need real conversation. We need introspection. We need all of that right now, I think, terribly, because we are alone with nothing but our thoughts. A lot of us are spending our days inside you know, with nobody but our immediate family, or, you know, some people without that at yeah. all. And we're, you know, we're left with our thoughts. And I remember thinking that early on, when, like, you know, everyone was ordered to isolate and all of that yeah. stuff. I remember thinking that, like, this is going to be really hard for people who are mentally unwell, because there's going to be no distraction. You are going to have your thoughts front and center, and, you know, you're going to be sitting home with them, and you're going to have to deal with them, and you can't let them spill over and affect the other people in your environment right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's certainly, I think, affected everybody in that way for sure. I think it's brought a lot of people's innermost or darkest or, you know, most loaded thoughts to the surface.
Yeah. Some people have said it's kind of like 9/11, but 9/11 was this terrible day. I feel like this has been, if it was 9/11 for 6 months.
Right.
Just how right. do you exist in that space of, oh my God.
Yeah. Continually.
Right.
I went today and got a COVID test. I'm not symptomatic or anything, but I traveled.
Okay.
But I feel most myself in the fall. I feel like I suffer seasonal depression in the winter.
Yeah.
But the fall is like my time. I feel like I come alive in the fall. I am the most creative. I am the most inspired. I have the most energy. I want to spend my time outside. Like
it's weird because I feel the same way. To me, the fall feels like a beginning. But it's not. I mean, I suppose as a child, it's the beginning of the school year, but in nature, it's not. It's things are beginning to die.
Yeah. That
I feel so, I always feel rejuvenated.
Quote the great 90s hit by Semisonic, "Closing Time." Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. Oh,
man. I wish you had waited for the end of the episode for that. That was such a great closer.
Chop it. Chop it. Chop it. Chop and screw that.
So what are you doing over there?
I'm burning some things to help me focus.
Okay.
Burning some focus herbs.
Oh, okay. Do you believe in crystals? Are you a crystal person?
I like my crystals. I don't fully subscribe to, like, this rock is going to teach me how to or help me to. But I think that with most spiritual activities, it's about the intention. It's about the mindfulness. So it's not only yeah. about the mineral that I'm holding. It's about the fact that I'm holding this mineral and saying, okay, my intention for this is to bring wealth into my life and to help me, you know, shift my thinking toward abundance or whatever. It's much more about the work that I'm doing holding that than it is about the item itself.
Okay. Because I've known people who really believed the item itself was doing something. I remember I was feeling stressed out by something, and this person in my life, like, gave me a stone and was like, oh, hold this one. And I just held it in my hand, and they were like, eh? Fixed? And I was like, no.
Yeah.
It didn't suck the depression out of me.
No, those pores weren't then filled with my depression. I think the tools are nice, and for some people they may resonate more deeply or whatever. But I think it's much more about the mindset. I know people who are really into their tools and really appreciate their crystals and things like that. But that's not my thing so much. Like, I like them and I have them, and I like, you know, finding out, oh, this is supposedly good for this and that and the other thing. And, you know,
yeah.
But I know that in actuality, it's more about what's happening in my head than what's happening, mm-hmm. you know, with that specific item.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. All right. You know what? I'm going to share with you my greatest fear surrounding my mental health.
Ooh, that's a doozy.
I am scared of the fact that I do believe that I'm not going to win the whole war.
Mm.
I've won a lot of battles. I'm still here. But I sometimes wonder if You know, I've still got a lot of years left. Will I win the whole war? Will I survive? I also fear just losing it, just losing my marbles. Because, you know, I feel like the stagecoach of my mind has rickety wheels. And when I'm, God, you know, hope I live to be like 80 something. What's my brain going to be like at 80 if this is the way it's like almost now? You know what I mean?
But you're actively working to enrich your brain and to make it better and to learn how to deal with the things that you don't like about it or the things that impede your daily life and make it more difficult. So perhaps at 80, things will be even better. Perhaps at 80, all this work that you've cumulatively done, because at this point, you've spent more of your life not doing the work than you have doing it. But at 80, you will have spent the majority of your life doing the work, being self-aware and learning and growing and managing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I suppose that's the other way to look at it.
But, you know, if you think of depression not as an emotional disease, but a physical thing that happens in your brain, you know, like depression has effects on memory. It has effect, you know, it has cognitive effects. Like my grandmother, she has dementia. And I think, God, like, I don't want that to happen to me.
I totally understand. That's one of my greatest fears as well.
And you know what? When I'm really down, and I'm sure you know this feeling, when I'm feeling really depressed, I feel like, you know, like if my brain were a clock, like all of the springs and pieces are coming apart and like floating apart. Like it's just coming, I'm coming undone.
Yep. Absolutely.
And, you know, I would love, I would love to believe that you're right, that by the time I get there, but you know, again, I think about like even just normal aging.
Yeah.
Well, like many people over a certain age in this country are on antidepressants just because your brain gets worse at producing the happy.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's also living conditions, I think, too.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it can be very hard for seniors in this country to live comfortably.
Yeah.
So, and it's, you know, isolated, I'm sure that plays a toll. Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, I was actually talking about this with a friend earlier. I would really just be honored to have the privilege of growing old.
Me too.
Especially, you know, both of my grandfathers died before I was born. They died young. Both of my parents died relatively young. I lost both my parents before I was 30. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to grow old in itself would be just such a great privilege for me. I would just be so happy to get there.
That's a great way of thinking about it.
Well, thanks. I'm trying, you know, trying to find new ways to think about stuff.
So do you ever have the same doubts that I have or the same fears that I have?
I do. I think truly my greatest fear with regard to mental illness is that at some point the people in my life will unite and decide I'm unfit in some way and be able to convince other people of my sanity or lack thereof or myself of that. Like, I'm terrified of that. Like, the idea of like being committed against your will and those kind of things, like that scares the shit out of me. And that's one reason that I've been terrified to be vulnerable, is that I don't want any of it to be used against me to say I'm an unfit mother or anything like that. Or that, you know, I'm just unfit to exist in society. I don't believe I am. I believe I'm self-aware and managing my illness well, but I also know that, you know, there's power in numbers, and people can convince each other and can convince others of things. And that is my greatest fear.
And you're also a woman.
Yeah.
And society seems to have an easier time taking a woman's liberty away than a man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And has an easier time labeling a woman as crazy or unhinged.
Right. I mean, if you look historically back to like hysteria, it's like, oh, she was horny. Oh, she wanted to read books. Yeah, you should definitely strap her down to a bed.
Yeah. Yeah, you should definitely.
What?
Oh, unreal. Unreal.
She's, this bitch is bananas.
Clearly a fucking witch.
Yeah, clearly a witch. my God.
So that, I think, is my greatest fear. And perhaps if I go the woo-woo route with it, maybe it's something that's rooted in a past life trauma or some shit like that. But my greatest fear is being prosecuted for the way that I think.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that I could understand that. I just watched One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, such a great film.
And I'd never seen it before.
So good.
And, yeah, I mean, the feeling of, like, not having that control over yourself and your life.
Yes, that's the scariest thing to me, is somebody taking my agency away.
Yeah. So have you ever, before you had kids, did you ever think about, like, I'm going to give my fucked up genes to my kids?
100%. I still think that all the time. I'm still always worried, like, oh, it's going to rear its head and I'm going to have to deal with it. But I believe I kind of had a moment the other day where this realization kind of washed over me, that my children have a great gift in having me for a mother, because I have gone through all of these things and I have navigated them with self-awareness and I continue to, and I've learned how to identify them in myself so I can hopefully identify them more easily in my children and help them to address those things from an earlier age, because I didn't have that. I had parents who were depressed and anxious, but who weren't self-aware. So I think that's actually a really, you know, I think I'm the perfect parent for that situation to help them navigate that.
I agree.
Should it happen.
Because, you know, like, there's nurture and nature, and maybe some of your nature will go into your kids, but so will your nurture.
Absolutely.
And it's something you're aware of and thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a person, just in general, the fact that you're a person that talks about feelings is so different from how many generations of parents.
100%.
That, like, let's just not talk about it.
And I admit to my children when I'm wrong, which I think is a big thing.
Yeah.
Like, I can remember, you know, being a kid and my parents thinking that I had done something that I didn't, and they, you know, flip out or whatever, and then they find out I didn't do it, and it's like, and then, you know.
They won't apologize.
That's it. That's the end of it. And when I do that, I make sure, you know, I'm sorry. Mommy was wrong. Mommy made a mistake. Even grown-ups make mistakes. Mommy makes mistakes all the time. So I'm here apologizing, and now I'm going to make it better, or, you know, whatever. I try to let my children know that I'm human, that there isn't going to be a day where, like, you know, all you have to do is get old enough or become a parent and you'll know everything.
Right, right.
You know, not just, oh, I know that because I'm the parent and I know everything.
Well, that
I don't give that to my kids.
Yeah, well, just an easy, lazy way of just trying to have complete, unquestioned control.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, and I know everything because I'm, you know, don't question me, whatever. Just do what I say.
I think one of the biggest struggles with parenting is there's this illusion of control. You think you're supposed to be able to control them, and that's not at all what the job is. It's not about controlling them. It's about helping them navigate their own journey. It's not about making their journey whatever you want it to be or what you think is best for them or whatever. It's about observing them, getting to know them, and helping them navigate their journey. That's it. That's it. You don't get to decide where they go. You don't get to tell them how to handle things. Right. You just need to try and teach them the best way to move forward.
Yeah.
And our parents' generation certainly did not think that way. Our parents' generation was like, I am the adult. I am to be respected and listened to and, you know, not questioned ever.
Right, 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 right. No, yeah.
Have you ever heard the theory that, like, you do absolutely remember everything you've ever experienced, said, whatever, like, is stored in your brain?
Yeah.
And you just, like, yeah, that fascinates me, that, like, it's all there.
That's what I think. That's
just can't get to it. Yeah, that's
dreams
true.
Dreams are just like all this weird information that's just, like, floating around.
Yeah,
because sometimes you'll dream about, like, something that you were thinking about yesterday, but then also, like, that kid from your third grade class.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how the fuck?
Why are you here?
Like, where did you come from?
Yeah, it's just your unconscious manifesting. And they say that anything that you see in your dreams, you've seen before in your life. Like, you won't invent things in your dreams, really. It's all things that you've seen before. It's all faces you've seen before.
Yeah.
You don't invent new people. Every person in your dream is somebody that you've seen. It's fascinating.
How do you dream? Do you have nightmares? Do you have pleasant dreams? Do you have lucid dreams?
For a very long time, I didn't dream for like the last few years. Well, you know, I know that I do dream, but I didn't remember it.
Right.
And since starting antidepressants, that's changed. So at first, I had very, very vivid dreams. And it was like, you know, they were lucid dreams where I would wake up, quote unquote, and feel like I had never slept because I was, you know, running through whatever obstacles my whole night. But I honestly, like, I like to try and do, like, dream work. So before I go to sleep, I will listen to certain things to try and, you know, ask to remember my dreams or to try to get my consciousness into that space. Because I do think that there are windows to your subconscious and to things that you've forgotten about your past and whatever. So I try to dream, but I don't always. What about you? Are you a nightmare person or?
I think back to when I was a kid and I'd have like nightmares. You know what I mean? Like scary shit happening.
Yeah. Like somebody chasing you or.
Right. But as an adult, I don't have any of that, but I have like depressing nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have a reoccurring dream that I've had my entire adult life where for some reason I have to move back into my childhood home. And I'm like stuck there and I can't leave.
Mm.
And it's not that I had like a bad childhood. It's just I had a melancholy childhood because of my depression.
Right.
You know, as a little kid, I had depression, but I didn't know what it was or I didn't have the cognitive ability to understand it. So there was just a lot of like sadness.
Right.
So I have dreams a lot that I'm like in, I'm back in that place.
Mm-hmm.
But it's rare that it's something like genuinely like spooky. Like I did have a dream recently where like I was in a dark place and there was like a dog howling and that was pretty like traditional.
That was a nice traditional spook.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was a pleasant, it was a pleasant change of pace. And then the dog came out and he was like, but what if you never own a home? And like, ah, damn it.
Fuck. This is damn the same it, nightmare. Dog.
Couldn't you just be a spooky, spooky monster?
Can you just howl at me?
Maybe your eating problems are never going to clear up and you'll always have a weird relationship with food.
Like, shut up, you mongrel.
Damn you, monster dog.
I get enough of this when I'm awake.
Depressed, funny, and smart, right? Like, you ever meet somebody so happy they're not funny at all?
And you're like, God, yes.
You and it's like what are you? You are not funny because your life is so good. There's no part of you that felt like it had to make good.
Yeah, you never had to make something joyous or, you know, right. create joy of your misery.
Right, right.
One of the kind of repeating intrusive thoughts that I would get all the time would be, I don't want to exist. And it wouldn't be that I wanted to kill myself or that I wanted to die. It would just be like, I don't want to exist. I just want to take a break from existence.
I don't want to be.
Yeah. I just want to stop being. I don't want to have to think. I don't want to have to breathe. I don't want to have to drink water. I don't want to have to shower. Like I just want to stop.
Sometimes I don't want to be me. Like I want to break from me in this.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm just like, I hate my own, I even my own worrying thoughts of worrying about this, that, and the other thing. Sometimes I'm just like, oh, shut the fuck up.
Like, just, would you just fucking stop?
God, man, yeah. Like, I'm so, you fucking dullard, you suck. Like, I, sometimes I, and I'm like, oh, I wish it were some other existence.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
For a little bit. You know, one thing that we didn't intentionally do with this show was we didn't intentionally go into with any political ideas. It was supposed it was meant to be about our mental health struggles and issues and how we deal with them and how we make jokes of them. But having, you know, looking back at all the episodes, especially the one about work, we get pretty leftist, pretty Marxist.
A little bit.
I don't know, what would you say to somebody who is conservative or someone who considers himself a Republican that wants to listen to this show but feels like afraid of us? Not afraid of us, but like, you know, is like, hears that and go like, you know, because it's really not what the show is supposed to be about. And I would I would be upset if somebody of a conservative bent were enjoying the show and then we say something super lefty and then they go, well, and then they turn it off, you know?
Right. I don't think that self-awareness has or should have a party affiliation or a, you know, political compass. I think that that's something that's needed across the board. And I think in general, people who lean left tend to be more in tune with emotion and more inclined to address emotion. And I think that perhaps that could bring balance to the Republican or conservative party because they're, you know, people have their values and what they believe in and whatever. And those things can still be okay if they're not oppressive toward other people or whatever. And I think that that comes from your own emotional health. Like, I think that the need sometimes to control other people or to control a situation or to resign to like law and order and stuff like that comes from feeling helpless as yourself. And I think there's a lot to be said for taking personal power, and that's nonpartisan. That's, you know, that's human. That's every person deserves that self-awareness and deserves that peace and deserves, you know, to have those deep thoughts and to examine themselves more closely. And, you know, every person I believe is worthy of that examination and of self-love and all of that. It doesn't matter, you know, to me what you, you know, the way you vote necessarily or whatever, if it's not harmful to another human. And I mean, you know, the current political climate is very charged and there is a lot of stuff on the table that could potentially be harmful to other humans, even if it's not to you, even if it doesn't affect you directly. And like we're saying, the self-awareness and depression and all of these things open us up to empathy. I think that's really important. I think that's really, really important because I think speaking about the state of things right now, there is no empathy found in government. There is no humanity. It's all very analytical and very, you know, concerned with law and order and maintaining the status quo and all of this stuff and not addressing the human issues that have led us to this point. And that's, as I said, nonpartisan. We are all subject to that. We are all experiencing these things right now, and self-awareness is a powerful tool to get through that.
Yeah, we are living through an insane time. I was listening to a podcast recently where the host is a little bit older than me. Well, actually more than a little bit older than me, but they're not old. And they were saying like, this is like 1968 again. Like we are as fucked up and crazy and divided and what the fuck is going on as we were in that crazy time where people were being assassinated and protests and. And it's just, it's wild, but it's just, there's so much pain. There's so much suffering. There's so much hurt. Just what we do to each other.
Absolutely. I think so much of that comes from every individual on whatever side of the equation feeling like they're not represented and not heard. Some people are right about that and some people are wrong. But I think that that's the root of it, is feeling not represented or not heard. And I think that's another thing that is rooted in self-awareness and in mental health. And, you know, I think so much of what's plaguing society now boils down to mental health issues.
Yeah. I think that all of us are suffering under the same system and feeling the same pain. And then there's just some of us that those people that are have created some of the pain for us, they've convinced us that they're not the ones who are at fault.
Right. Or like, that we deserve the pain.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, exactly.
That like it's because of something we've done or not done.
Right. Like, oh, your life is bad, absolutely. But you know why it's bad? It's not bad because of, you know, us, you know, your boss. I love you. It's bad because of the black family down the street.
Yeah.
Or it's bad because of this or bad because of that. And it's like, no, we, the person who is hurt, harming you is getting you to be mad at somebody else, yeah. not them.
Yep. Passing blame. And everybody feels the need to have someone else to blame for their suffering. There needs to be some external source that they can blame, where they can project all their anger and all their insecurity and all their hate and everything else at somebody else because they are the reason that they're suffering. When in reality, if you're suffering, there's a large component of it that's happening internally. Like, of course, yeah. there are, you know, environmental factors that are going to increase or decrease your suffering and whatever, but so much of what that is internal. It's not about your circumstance so much as it is about the way you think and the way that you move through life.
Yeah. So what do you prefer, Cocoa Pebbles or Fruity Pebbles?
Ooh, Fruity.
Correct.
Correct.
And if I'm here to say anything, if you like Cocoa Pebbles more than Fruity Pebbles, fuck you.
Fuck right off, all the way off.
Why don't you unsubscribe from this podcast and go fucking, you know what, go eat your fucking Cocoa Pebbles, you peasant.
Yeah, drink your chocolatey ass cereal milk.
If I want a cocoa cereal, I'm going to eat Cocoa Puffs like a goddamn American.
Yep. I'm going to go for or Reese's Puffs. Let's get real. You bet. Let's get real. You... If I'm having chocolate, I want peanut butter with it.
Absolutely. Oh, my God.
How do you feel about the spooky cereals? Are you like a Frankenberry, a Boo Berry?
As a man who loves Halloween and spookiness, you think I would, but as cereals, they never did it for me.
I agree. I like the packaging. I like the yeah. tradition of them coming out around Halloween, but it's not really doing it for me flavor-wise. Yeah.
The only one, I mean, like, I'm not a big berry guy, so the only one that was close is, like, Count Chocula. Mm. But even him, there's better chocolate shit out there.
I agree. I am with you. I love the artwork. I love the tradition of it, but you can fucking keep the cereal.
Yeah. I feel like you could learn a lot about a person by their cereal preferences.
Yeah. What's your favorite cereal?
Cool. That's a fantastic question. It's so hard to answer just one. I'm going to say the Oreo cereal. The Oreo Oats.
Yeah, that's a goodie.
They're a bit hard on the roof of your mouth. Mm. But you know what? No, I'm going to take it back. I want to say Captain Crunch.
Ooh, that is certainly hard on the mouth, but right. worth every...
It's like
worth
eating shards of glass.
Yeah, it's worth every wound.
Do you know why it's so good? Because it's cornbread flavored. And there's not a lot of things that are cornbread wow. flavored. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's all right. The chocolate or strawberry or whatever.
Yeah, I like a good corn.
Yeah.
I'm with you. My favorite is Honey Bunches of Oats.
Ooh, okay.
I love Honey Bunches of Oats. I love those clusters, man.
Have you ever seen, I forget what it's called, but it's basically like just clusters.
Ooh, no.
It's like Oops All Clusters.
Oops All Clusters.
Like Oops All Berries.
Yeah, I'm into it. Very into it. I love in Chex Mix, the rye chips.
Yeah.
They've now made like bags of all rye chips.
Really?
Yeah, Oops All Rye Chips is where it's at.
Have you tried Reese's Take Five?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. They're incredible.
It's bliss.
It's just take a Reese's peanut butter cup. But add a fucking salty pretzel into it and a little bit of caramel.
Yep. And I thought Take Five was perfect.
Yeah.
And then they went ahead and collabed with Reese's and my mind has blown.
I know. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
You know, I think my biggest addiction, the real root issue is fucking sugar. I have such a problem with sugar.
Same. Same. I drink a lot of soda and sugar's a rough one.
I have binges. Like, I'll have a day where I eat fairly healthy, and then like the way I assume normal people wake up in the middle of the night and want a glass of water, like I'll wake up at like 3 a.m. and be like, I need some chocolate, and then I'll have like 7 take 5 minis or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, it's almost like not conscious. Like I'm conscious. I'm not sleepwalking, but I'm halfway there.
Right.
Because like, I'll wake up the next day and see the wrappers and be like, oh no.
What have you I did done? It again. You did it again, you shit.
Like a werewolf. Oh no.
Just wake up in a pool of wrappers. No.
I need to like have somebody like chain my door closed at night and be like,
yeah,
what you hear?
You need a padlock.
Do not let me out of this room.
I don't care if I beg.
I do not need. And by the way, I've had at least twice in my life where I completely quit sugar and lost an insane amount of weight. And it does feel good on the other side, but oh, talk about nightmares. When I was getting off sugar, I had nightmares. It was like my body was freaking the fuck out.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah.
We want our thing.
We want our thing. Oh, it's so true. Well, in general, how do you feel about this whole process of having made these 10 episodes?
Oh, I'm so grateful for it, truly. Like, this is something that I have toyed with myself for a really long time with wanting to do, with wanting to share stories and just have conversation about the things I'm passionate about, the things that I think matter. So I'm incredibly grateful to have been able to do this with you. I really am. And it certainly, I think, has changed a lot of things for me and opened my eyes to a lot of things. It's made me feel capable of doing something, which is huge, because I've felt completely like like a shell of a human since becoming a parent. It's kind of felt like, oh, okay, so this is my role. I'm mom, and I don't do other things. So it was really nice to, like, remember that I'm still a person with my own unique thoughts and talents and whatever else that I'm allowed to share and experience and explore. That was a really big takeaway for me, too. I'd like to know your final thoughts as well, too. I'm very curious.
Well, I think I went into this feeling maybe more wounded and looking for something that would help me heal. And I've been so grateful to you. We were not talking we were friends and we were connected through social media, but we were not like talking regularly before we did this show. And I'm so, like, I came up with the idea of the show, but now I can't imagine it without you. Like, it's entirely like what this show is, the two of us. So I'm so grateful to you for doing this. And I feel like I have, I've gotten a lot out of it. And let
that
me
makes say, me so happy.
Yeah. And let me say this, there's going to be more. I don't know what form, we both have a lot of responsibilities and lives, but there's going to be more.
Yeah. I think we've got stuff to share and things to do and say.
It's not like, hey, it's the last episode and we have no problems anymore. We did it.
And you know what? I don't think I ever need to talk again.
Hooray.
So that's good.
I'm canceling my therapist appointments.
Who needs meds?
Yeah, in some way, there'll be more. Not sure how
yet. Absolutely. This is not the end.
Nothing ever ends.
If I may quote the great Semisonic and their 90s hit Closing Time, every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end.
And this has been Cuckoo Bananas. I'm Mike Bongiorno. You're Kate Gainey. I got to say right here at the end, I always trip over saying your name because I want to say Katie.
Yeah.
But I asked you early on, how do you want me to refer to you? And you said Kate. And I said, you know what? She's a grown-ass person. You met her when she was like a teenager. She don't want to be Katie anymore. But in my head...
It's funny. I actually talked about that this weekend because I met up with a friend that I had never met in person. It was an online friend. And he has only ever known me as Kate. And he just like naturally started calling me Katie. And I was like, I kind of love that. So if you are comfortable calling me Katie, I like that. I like people to call me what they feel, you know, not anything like derogatory, but whatever they feel like, you know.
Don't call I don't want to be like douchebag.
Yeah, don't be like, oh, this fucking cunt.
Hey, D-bag.
But Katie is fine.
No, it's too late. I've committed to Kate. You're Kate Katie. I'm Mike Mongiorno. This is Cuckoo Bananas. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for coming on this little journey with us. I hope these episodes have been funny. I hope you've gotten something out of it. Let me say, for legal reasons, that me and Kate are not licensed professionals.
Oh, no.
We're not therapists. We are not psychologists or psychiatrists. We are not healthcare or mental health professionals. We're just normal people.
Ish.
Yeah. But thank you so much for coming along with us.
Thank you.
There'll be more. Bye.